Hi, my name is Lisa Ma, and I'm part of the team who run the Face-to-Face Networks events across Brisbane, Australia since 2005. And now we're bringing this great content to you, the listener. Each episode is a live recording of a past panel discussion, and so if you like what you hear, the magic of these events is still being in the room and making connections in person. You can find out when the next live Networks event is on at networksevents.com.au or find the link in the show notes. In this episode, we have a juicy conversation on winning campaigns, creating a Super Bowl moment. Make sure you stay listening to the end when we cover off the panel's final top tips. Happy listening. Thank you. So welcome to Networks, everyone. We love holding these events because they're informative yet relaxed, not to mention held in funky and unique venues around Brisbane. We're actually now in our 14th year, and I'd now like to introduce you to your panel facilitator this evening, Liam Fitzpatrick. He is the founder and head of communications at ComsWork, where he helps brands refine a voice best positioned for their industry. He is also the host of his podcast, Cut the Clichés. Would you please put your hands together and welcome Liam.
Thank you for that. Thanks, Lisa. So look, guys, we're here tonight to talk about Super Bowl and marketing that exists within it. And we've got a great panel for you this evening, which includes, if you can join me on stage, Sarah Kelly, who is the Associate Professor in Law and Marketing and Marketing Discipline Leader at UQ Business School. Would you like to join me on stage? And if you give her a round of applause as we go. I've got Luke Wheatley, who is the Head of Creative and Content at Flight Center, where he leads brand strategy for one of the largest travel companies in the world. Welcome, Luke. And last but not least, we have Rob Hudson. Rob is the Managing Director of the highly awarded Clevenger Brisbane office. Will you please welcome Rob? Thank you, guys. Well, look, we're talking tonight about the Super Bowl, which, if you watched it, was highly disappointing, especially as a Rams fan. The lowest scoring Super Bowl in history and an utter dire game. However, we're not talking about the game tonight. We are talking about the advertising. And that had a better result than the actual game. So tonight, we're talking about sports events in general. If we can have the slide summary, please. I'm talking about large sporting events and their appeal for brands and getting involved with those platforms for advertisers. Creative advertising in this day and age, do we need to be advertising on Super Bowl, where we're spending $5 million, I think it is, for a 30-second ad, which is no small change, put it that way. And then any lessons that we can learn from Super Bowl ads that we can apply maybe to other content campaigns as well. We're talking about any kind of newsjacking techniques that have been used in the past. And we have a lot of content to get through tonight in terms of videos as well. So just kicking us off, I've asked each of our panelists to give us their favorites from this year. So we will kick off with Sarah. Who has selected the Bumble ad featuring Serena Williams. If we can see that one, please.
The world tells you to wait, that waiting is polite, and good things will just come. But if I waited to be invited in, I never would have stood out. If I waited for change to happen, I never would have made a difference. So make the first move. Don't wait to be told your place. Take it. Don't wait for people to find you. Find them. In work. In love. In life. And most of all, don't wait to be given power. Because here's what they won't tell you.
We already have it. 'Cause I'm a
pretty upbeat soundtrack, isn't it? Sarah, can you tell us why that was your favorite ad of this year's Super Bowl?
Yeah, look, it's probably not about being, and these guys I'm sure would comment on this, you know, not the most incredibly creative execution or anything, but I just love the message, and it is quite groundbreaking in terms of Super Bowl and masculine sports and the sorts of ads that are generally placed. It's obviously positioning around female empowerment, which aligns very, very strongly with the Bumble brand. If you're not familiar with Bumble, it's a great, fairly new company. They've chosen Super Bowl to launch that concept and that brand, you know, and really resonate in the national and global market. And it's all about empowering women in these online dating apps. I'm not that familiar with them, but the ball is in the women's courts. The other interesting thing about this ad is that it was directed, film produced by women, in addition to having probably the strongest personality and performer in women's sport featuring in it, which she has throughout the year for Bumble, actually. So Serena Williams, of course. So really groundbreaking in that it breaks through all the female stereotypes. I know that Super Bowl ads have generally featured laundry detergent targeting women. Very few ads have targeted women, you know, breaking through those sort of traditional stereotypes. So a really interesting, groundbreaking approach to the sorts of ads we see play. So I enjoyed it in that respect.
Yeah,
sport
fantastic.
As well, I love.
Fantastic. We will kick off with Rob as well, if we can play the next video. This one, I believe, is from Kia.
We're not famous. There are no stars in the sidewalk for us. No statues in our honor. We're just a small Georgia town of complete unknowns. The closest thing to a world stage is 81 miles away in Atlanta tonight. Our movie stardom, our football careers, they never took off. Because we are not known for who we are. We hope to be known for what we do, what we build. This thing we've assembled, it has a chance to be remembered. No, we are not famous, but we are incredible. And we make incredible things.
Nice little disclaimer to try advertising not to do that at home. Anyway,
yeah,
through the middle of that advert.
Yeah.
So this is what the car can do, but please don't.
Please don't.
Do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Good advertising standards and health and safety and everything. I think the reason why I picked that one, and there was a lot to get through, I think what's lovely about that one, it was one of the few in the night that was actually emotionally led.
Yeah.
And obviously played off the fact it was being played in Georgia. So like, use that localism,
yeah.
But also for a brand that most people wouldn't even know was constructed in, and cleverly worded in the fact it's not made in America, it's constructed in America, so the parts are assembled there.
Yeah.
But I think they did a beautiful job of actually telling that story for what would naturally be a Korean brand and therefore relegated in that space, for it to become in the biggest...
To localize it, really, yeah.
Yeah, the biggest American thing there is in history, they stuck a product that's not American and made it American, and I think they did an amazing job of it.
Yeah, fantastic. And there was definitely a heartwarming feel to that from the music through to the way that the story is told as well.
And Super Bowl ads are traditionally, there's a lot of comedy. I mean, you'll see tonight, there's just a lot of comedy. So to put that in amongst all of that and actually allow themselves to kind of go, well, actually, let's take a very slow-paced ad as well, for you know, but beautifully done. So it was a really good one.
Yeah, fantastic. There was a lot of different types of ads, I think over 100 we were talking about before, so we've only got a snapshot here tonight. Luke, perhaps we can go on to your favourite ad, if we can roll that one, please.
Yeah, I've seen a lot out here in the West.
But a juicy charbroiled burger with a patty made from plants?
Only the folks at Carl's Jr. can pull out something that bold. All the legendary flavor, none of the meat. When the wagon of change comes, you ride along with it. The new Beyond Famous Star with Cheese. Only at Carl's Jr., where the food is the star.
We were just talking about comedy, and there we go.
I don't know how funny that is, and that's not why I chose it, not for its comedic elements, but more so that that's the first vegan ad that's ever played on the Super Bowl. And it's interesting that the ad doesn't actually say it's vegan, but those who know Beyond Meat Patties are a big vegan supplier. And so what I found interesting is here's a massive company, a massive brand like Carl's Jr., and they're only just coming into Australia now, but they're huge in America, have actually drawn a line in the sand, and they put their advertising on the Super Bowl to say this is the future.
Had they done that before?
This is the first vegan ad ever on TV or on the Super Bowl. Yeah. Hungry Jack's here did it in Australia. So they put all their money into a vegan ad, and I think that's really interesting. The fact that they say when the wagons of change are coming, you hitch along, and to play that to a mainly male audience, I thought was really interesting. Much like your one as well, you know, the world is changing, people's expectations are changing, and brands are now moving forward with it.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, are there any key ingredients that cover all of the ads to what goes into make a successful ad? Is there any parallels you can draw?
I think you need to know your audience, and I think each of those ads know their audience. If you looked at the first one, bang, you know, female audience, in control. The vegan ad, it's targeting certain people. They know exactly what they want to say, and they say it in 30 seconds besides your ad, which they still say it. How long's yours?
Yeah,
a minute?
60, that was a 60, yeah. I think the other reality is money. Like, being brutal, it's the Super Bowl. You're spending every 30 seconds is $5 million. There's some money spent on production. There's very few.
That's a media spend rather than the
very few of them. And of course, that gets equated into production spend as well. Like, very few of them were badly made. Yeah. So I think that's like that. There were some shockers. There were some terrible ads that
we will come on, which we'll come to later, right? Well, yeah.
That just abandoned brand for glory. But I think money, like the production value of all of them, is pretty exceptional.
So did you have something to add?
I was going to say also, you know, the vegan ad. Also, Carl's Jr. knew what they were doing. They were spending $5 million on that ad placement because they knew they were going to get probably millions and millions of dollars of free PR, that people would go out and say, wow, look, it's the first vegan ad ever played on Super Bowl. So they knew what they were doing. You know, it's a smart marketing strategy.
A calculated decision. We've talked a little bit about what goes into a successful campaign and knowing your audience. Maybe without going into the full debate around the Gillette ad, which came out before the Super Bowl, do you feel that brands need to represent now, maybe more than ever, the fact that they have a purpose behind what they do? Sarah, perhaps you can answer that one.
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting trend. It is, I mean, as marketers, as a lot of everyone is here, you know, brand identity, brand image is very contingent on how authentic that brand is and how it's perceived as authentic and walks the authentic talk for a long period of time in a market. So I think consumers more than ever are very savvy and vigilante almost about brands which fail to walk that talk. So increasingly I think we're seeing, in terms of resonating with newer markets, newer consumers like the millennials and Gen Zs coming through, which are far more, I suppose, diverse and politically savvy, for instance, who care about a platform. They want their brands to stand for something. It's very much around things like the newsjacking and standing for an authentic purpose that resonates, particularly in those markets where it really matters, and walking that talk in a consistent way, albeit sometimes controversial, as we saw with the Gillette campaign.
Lots of pictures on Twitter of people throwing their Mac 3s or whatever into the toilet. Not sure that's going to end well. Anything more to add on that, Rob?
Look, I think if you do it well, it comes from the brand, you're fine. I think if you wash it on top, it can backlash at you horrifically.
Do you feel with that particular campaign that it was in keeping with the rest of the brand and its positioning?
Not historically, no. I mean, I think that's why it got the attention it got, because it was just like there's enough cues in there to kind of go, I can see how they got there. I think time and testimony will be whether or not they keep it alive.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the consumers are very cynical and they get it. It's like if you do it once and you try and make a big noise about it, it's interesting. We're showing Pepsi later, and obviously the Pepsi Riot ad you know, which was like, didn't work.
Speaking of which, actually, could we, I think that's the next video up.
Did I just do a horrible segue?
No, it was a fantastic segue.
I'll take a Coke.
Is Pepsi okay?
Is Pepsi okay? Is Pepsi okay? Ow! Our puppy's okay. He's a shooting star, okay?
Is the laughter of a small child okay?
Are you with me? You seem confused. Let's role play. Now.
Okay, I'm Steve. I'm an actor.
No. Just order something.
You will
have a nice cold glass of the best thing you ever tasted, okay?
Okay.
I think you might be just saying it wrong. You gotta say it with pride, okay?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, kind of. Pepsi's more than okay. It's... okay! Okay! Okay, what have we learned today?
You want a Pepsi?
I want a Pepsi.
She wants a Pepsi. There you go. Okay! Like Lil Jon. Okay.
I've got to come up with my own catchphrase.
Okay.
Rob, do you want to talk us through what just happened?
Now, why the hell did I make you watch that? Look, I think the question originally was like, you know, you show the most successful campaign that we know to date. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. And I think that ad, take it as it is, you know, it's American humor, so that comes with sort of an edge to it anyway for us. But I think there's a couple of really important things around what Pepsi did. You have to get that in context of what happens and where Pepsi sits in the world. So you've got to remember the Super Bowl this year was in Atlanta. So Atlanta is the home of Coke, right? So if you walk into a bar in Atlanta and ask for a soft drink, they'll just ask you what type of Coke you want. It's literally the bottling plant is one end, the manufacturing plant's the other end. The museum is like half the high street. This is Coke territory. So Pepsi went, great, no better time than to poke them in the eye. So 2 weeks out or 3 weeks out from the Super Bowl, they took every billboard. They even lit up three buildings in blue with a little stripe. And they ran a viral campaign and a kind of teaser campaign that just said, hey, look who's come to town. Now, you put that in context, this caused an outcry. Like, you know, forget social media. These people were lobbying government to have the billboards taken down. Like, this is huge. And what they did was back of that newsjacking, really, in some respects, is they got the attention of the media that went, this is fantastic. What the hell is the ad going to be like? And what the ad really does, in some respects, is deal with a business issue, right? It deals with a brand issue, which is there's an apology consistently across the planet when you ask for a Coke. If they don't serve Coke, they kind of apologize and go, will a Pepsi do? And that's a really naff place to be if you're a brand. You know, But they took that, didn't they?
And then they put it right slap bang center.
So what they've basically done, and you've got to bear in mind a big organization like that, they control their supply chain and they supply up to a point, but they don't control the staff. That last server is the restaurant or the cafeteria or whatever it might be you're in. So what they've basically done is done a campaign there that talks to all the people that sell their product, not so necessarily to the consumer. That's a hell of an expensive way of getting a message out, but it was probably a message that they felt they needed to get out in market.
Yeah.
And then famously, they've just pulled out of Atlanta now and they've put up in those billboard spots, they've put up a almost like a PR message in those spots that says, hey, thanks for having fun with us. You know, let's keep it going. And they've had the soda truce for a long time. So they've kind of put that like the soda wars. So they sort of said, hey, truce, like it was fun. Let's move on. Let's see if Coca-Cola keep the truce.
Yeah. And for you as a campaign, did that work?
It's a difficult one. It's a very American ad. I think I don't get excited about the spot. I get excited about the strategy that goes around all the parts of it.
And from that perspective, you think it's...
I think it'll work its backside off, yeah.
Fantastic. And in terms of which ones missed the mark then as well, I think we've got a couple of videos. First one is Colgate, I believe.
I'm a close talker, so I was excited about all new Colgate Total. Its breakthrough formula does more.
Wonderful.
Sensitivity strengthens teeth. It kills germs through my whole mouth.
I like your confidence.
Thanks, Mr. Lee. Now there's no such thing as too close.
Yes, there is.
No, there's not.
Yes, there is.
No, there's not.
Okay.
All new Colgate Total. Do more for your whole mouth.
I feel uncomfortable just sitting here and they're not even in my face.
I think, quick show of hands, who gets the joke? Because there's an American joke in there, but I'm interested if anybody get it. Yeah, a couple of people put their hand up, right? So it's a Seinfeld reference, right? So if you don't know it, you don't get it. So in America, maybe it works better. I worked on Colgate for many years, and I just don't know how this made it past the brand guys. It's kind of doesn't talk about any of the things we would normally talk about. Product benefit is this guy has got, you know, did he have gingivitis? Don't know. Hasn't got it now. It's a bit. It's just for me. It's just reasonably cringeworthy, and it makes, as you say, makes you feel uncomfortable, and you kind of go, is that the outtake that brand would want when it's always been about confidence? You know, it's actually kind of like it doesn't leave you feeling confident on his behalf. It leaves you feeling sympathetic for the delivery guy. for me, it just misses the mark.
Yeah, Luke, do you have anything to add?
Oh, I totally agree. And I was just going to say, so what, when you're in the supermarket and you buy that product, are people going to assume you're a close talker? Is that the thing? Like, who's it talking to?
It's
I don't
not
know who
positive,
the target audience
it?
Is.
No, it's a slightly weird one. And even from an executional point of view, when they do the back, I mean, it's mechanical, but when they do the back and forth between the two faces, it actually looks like quite a big distance. So it actually doesn't even work in terms of the way.
No, it reminded me of Peep Show, but not in a good way. Anyway. We've got one more ad that perhaps failed to hit the mark. This was from Olay.
Come on! Let's go. Call someone.
I can't unlock my phone.
You mean you can't unlock your phone?
It doesn't recognize my face.
I've been using Olay. It has totally transformed my skin. 28 days ago, I looked like that.
That's bananas. That's you.
Your skin's glowing. You could be a movie star.
Really?
I mean
no.
This one was slightly interesting because I think the panel felt that it's not necessarily a bad ad. Sarah, what did you think?
I do think it's a bad ad, but that being said, I think it aligns with the Bumble strategy. They're trying to resonate with the female market. You know, one of the other reasons around that, around the empowerment trend that's happening, the hashtag MeToo and Time's Up campaigns, it's also the fact that the NFL has finally realised and the Super Bowl advertisers have consequently realised that 45% of the viewers and followers of NFL are women. The budget deciders in the households across America watching the NFL are women. The mothers deciding who's participating in NFL, and they have a big problem there too, are women. So it's really great to see this trend. I think it could be a little bit mistargeted. Again, probably for the same reasons as the close talker, but I'd love to hear the creative's view on this, in that there's a bit of an inside joke about the movie. The I don't even know what
Scream?
Movie. Is it Scream and Game Night? Or I don't know. I guess so. It's Scream.
It's...
I know what you do.
I thought it was Halloween.
There you go. I don't even... So there's an in-joke that maybe mistargets the mass, the larger female market. It misses the point a little bit. So I would argue that.
Guys, anything to add?
Yeah, I think it's ham to death, isn't it? Let's be perfectly honest with you. It takes a genre that doesn't really fit with the brand and just plays it out to the point where it just dies somewhere in the middle of that ad. I think the bit where he gets that photo, I don't know if you saw how bad she looked in the photograph, she's never looked that bad in her life. And I think that's also where the consumer just goes, yeah, come on. Like,
she's also a personality that hasn't been on screens in...
It's a brave move. I mean, and we haven't really dived into personality. I mean, literally, there's a celebrity everywhere, right? I mean, this is the golden era of making money if you're the Super Bowl ad celebrity, right? And even like the Pepsi one's got them scattered in the background. You don't even know who they are half the time, and they're just sort of in the cafe. That one was a brave decision. I get why they would use her. She doesn't seem like a missed shot on in terms of a brand ambassador, but do something better than that with her if you're going to spend the money, which they obviously did.
Well, look, we've talked a lot about creative so far. Let's talk about the actual impact that these ads are having. Perhaps we can bring up the slide. Success of Super Bowl ads. There have been studies that have been done into it. There's one that looked over the last 15 years or so. And companies that had an ad air during the Super Bowl performed better than the S&P 500 by 1% over the 10-day trading period before and after the Super Bowl. Now, that's kind of a small bump. If we look at this year's stats, which are on the right, so Pepsi up 0.8%. Microsoft, we haven't shown you that ad, but 2.9% over that same period. So is this something that's just a kind of a blip in the road, Sarah, or is it something that can have long-term impact for a brand as well?
I think as
it's not the easiest question to answer.
Well, you know, the lagged effects of advertising is one of the biggest challenges, right? Of evaluating any marketing and advertising messaging and campaigns. So this in general, from the studies I've seen, the stock market effects on big announcements, whether it's through advertising or it could even be partnering with the Super Bowl or, you know, that halo effect around sponsorship announcements, for instance, yes, there is usually a spike, but no, it doesn't necessarily, it often sort of gets corrected in the market anyway, and, the market expects it anyway, so it doesn't really pay off in the capex of the company in the long run anyway, because the market knows they're advertising in the Super Bowl, so they expect it, and the trade occurs around that. So it gets corrected very, very quickly in general. So it's the long-term effects, of course, that matter. And, you know, married into all of this is the integrated marketing comms that is so important, you know, the digital side, the social media side to all of this, the billboards, as Rob has already said, and that's you need to assess that very holistically. Not just in terms of stock price.
So is you almost using that as a platform, as a basis for the start of a campaign, for a launch of a particular product, but then it's how you integrate it afterwards.
Absolutely, and that's why, I mean, Super Bowl is often chosen as the platform and large events like that to announce a new brand to market or reposition a brand in a market as well, as we've already discussed, Pepsi, for instance, in the heartland. So
poking Coca-Cola in the eye, really.
Well, the other question is, do you even need to pay $5 million for 30 seconds? There are many examples of brands that have kind of hijacked their way into it. And I think we've got an example next of a Newcastle Brown ad from however many years ago it was, Rob?
I'd be about three, I think. Yeah, about three years ago. Yeah.
If we can play that one, please.
We'll fade out. It's a long piece. Okay. Obviously, the advantage of not being on air is that you don't have to stick to 30 seconds, but...
I was really excited to make a commercial with Newcastle, but then turns out they don't even have the money or permission to make a commercial. They can't even say the word it's bleeped. I don't think they can say like the game. I don't think you can mention football like in any capacity. How the are you going to make a commercial without saying the words? I was surprised that I even got offered the part, I don't think about
it. So she goes on for a bit,
yeah,
to say the least. And at the same time, they launched the whole campaign as If We Made It, which was the campaign at the time, If We Made It. And they literally they made no attempt to make a Super Bowl. They really, really, really didn't have the budget. And they paid her to do this one, and the rest of them were all these kind of really bad scamps of ads. So they literally used sort of storyboard ads to show you what the ad might have been. And they did an exceptional job. And what they actually wrote on the back of was that there's just this media pressure that comes in before a Super Bowl where everybody wants to talk about Super Bowl advertising, but clearly all
and the
big
brands... And that
starts
earlier and earlier, right?
This year it was about 4 weeks out, 5 weeks out.
I think I saw some before Christmas as well.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And what was interesting is watching... I mean, we were talking about earlier, right? The Gillette one, right? We'd all seen it by the time it got to Super Bowl. It kind of like... Is now the case of trying to be in that slot, or is it about getting the media attention beforehand? Because there is a huge amount. I mean, the news would cover that every launch of every ad ever.
Yeah.
So Newcastle Brown Ale, very tiny budget, paid her to do that one viral video just to get a bit of celebrity. Everything else out the back of it was knocked out for like tiny.
Guys, if you can start thinking about questions, we will have questions time quite soon. Before then, though, so we've talked a little bit about how people try to newsjack the campaign. What about if you just ignore the Super Bowl completely? What other content mechanisms have you got? Luke, perhaps you can talk us through what Flight Center does.
I think we've seen some great ads from really big brands that spend a lot of money. There's a lot of brands out there who don't have the budgets of Pepsi or Coke or Microsoft, and most of us work in that real world of we don't have $5 million, we don't have $1 million, we don't have $100,000. So what do we do? So what we do at Flight Center, and I think what really strong marketers will do, is look at what we can do outside of those really busy periods. Super Bowl, really busy. There's an expectation if you're Pepsi, you're going to have an ad. That's great. But if you're not Pepsi, you stay out of that area. You don't even touch that area, and you start spending your money in places that it's not so busy and not so crowded.
And what's made a difference for you guys?
So, well, for us, this is a really simple example. There was a 10-year challenge that was up on social media. And we kind of went, oh, let's just do something funny. Let's put our captain up who represents our brand. And we didn't change the photo. We just put up the same photo and said it's 10 years difference. And we said, what's his secret? He just keeps traveling. We put it up, and you can see some of the, and our team really went to town on the comments as well. So, we were there like just constantly hitting refresh for all the comments. So people were saying things like, oh, cause he hasn't been our captain for 10 years. That was part of the joke. And so someone put the old captain up there and we responded, you know, new phone, who dis? And and we got like heaps and heaps of like this organic reach. So we didn't even put money. Well, you can't put money behind things on Instagram. So on Instagram, we got 2,800 likes, which doesn't sound like a lot, but organically, that's huge. We had 205 comments, 305 times it was shared, and it was saved 97 times. So we felt like we really nailed that. On Facebook, we got 75,000 organic reach, but then 368,000 paid. And when I says paid, we're talking about $500 we put behind this. Yeah. Our ad recall lift was about 0.02 cents. So from a KPI point of view, that really hit our major KPIs. We had 137 comments and 35 shares. For us, that was huge. And all we did was put up a photo. And we just kind of were part of the conversation. And I think that's something that brands can do, is be part of the conversation and kind of have fun.
At what stage did you guys decide to get on board for this? Was this something, keep an eye out for what's happening on social media and let's follow a trend, or?
No, we kind of just saw it and we said, hey, let's do something funny. Yeah. That's kind of what we do a lot. We just try to be as organic and authentic. And I know people hate those words, but we try to be as organic, you know, as authentic as possible. And we're also human. So we see something funny and we think something funny, so we put it out. We think about times of the year, like Valentine's Day, St. Paddy's, we're going to do something pretty cool that we haven't done before. We kind of just think of main times throughout the year that we can just do something different. If people notice it, great. If they don't, we just keep it moving.
So that plan for the kind of 12-month period would happen end of the year, beginning of the year, and then things that you can plan for and then things that just come up.
So at Flight Center, we have a plan, and that plan pretty much changes after a week. Like most marketers, the market changes, something else is happening. We're in travel. There's always something happening in travel that we didn't expect. So, yeah, so there is planned. That's probably about 30%. And the rest is looking at the environment. And
keeps the job interesting.
Yeah, really interesting.
Well, looking at maybe how else people can get you to remember your brand, who's doing newsjacking and doing it well, Sarah? I think there was some airlines that we discussed previously, and even an advert around a conspiracy theory for Mexican avocados as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one of my favourites. I think most of you would be familiar with that ad. It's been running sort of as a series through the last few Super Bowls about Mexican avocados, basically. So, of course, you know, lots of news about Mexico and Trump's campaigns around the wall. So they sort of newsjacked that the Trump era and probably the last couple of years of and long-term conspiracy theories and position it as a sort of Knights Templar underground secret society where they went through all these, you know, what about area, what is it, 54? And what about, oh no, yeah, they don't know about that yet. Don't tell them about that. And, they, you know, they go through all these, you know, all these pieces of news or more recent news around Trump as well and conspiracy theories there around voting and the election. Don't they know we did that, you know? And then it comes
he
around
gives them
to
a lot
the wall.
Of material anyway.
And then have we told them about the Mexican avocados? Do they know about them? And you know, so that's how they launched that brand of avocados. So very, very clever use of humor mixed with current news and I guess suspicion in the market, you know, to reposition that brand as something that can be trusted and you know, tongue in cheek to those who wouldn't trust it. So very cleverly done. And that could have gone pear-shaped, but in my view, it didn't.
I do think it was interesting this year, the lack of political reference. Yeah. You know, over the Obama years, there was always like a number of ads that would made some kind of political reference.
Well, the Washington Post was probably
the
only one.
They have
one.
To, right?
Yeah.
They don't have a choice. But realistically, for the amount of mainstream brands, just went, that's not funny anymore, and just walked away from that kind of area of material.
Yeah. There's only probably so many times you can reference it. When you've got when you've got comedians doing it every night, then it's probably a little bit harder to have that impact. Talking about impact, actually, the thing that is really interesting for me around Super Bowl is not just the brands and maybe the uplift for them, but potential indirect consequences as well. Can you tell us a little bit about competitive interference, Sarah?
Sure. It's actually, for anyone a psychologist in the room, a lot of marketers are actually. It's quite interesting. But it's just a cognitive psychology term around memory errors produced when you have two similar stimuli in a similar context. And in the brand world, that means placing maybe two brands from the same category, you know, around an event theme, something like Super Bowl, so placed in the same context. And if it's done really cleverly and therefore legally, you can do what, you know, things like ambush marketing strategy is a great example of this, where a brand will play, like Pepsi did really, in Coke's territory, in the same context, you know, leading on to Super Bowl, blanket placement and all the rest. So a very good way of affecting what is known in cognitive psychology research as a very strong established memory error effect. So poorer recall, poorer recognition attributed to the legitimate sponsor. So it's a really interesting one. And another effect we see that is sometimes the lagged effect when one category sponsor, so often you know, the Olympics or Super Bowl, you get these long-term sponsors like McDonald's and the Summer Olympics. They exit that kind of junk food, fast food category. A new one jumps in to replace it immediately due to the prestige of that event. But there'll be ongoing confusion effects that actually linger around that original long-term sponsor. So it can be used there as well.
So sometimes market leaders, for instance, will get bumps in website traffic just because maybe one of their competitors has advertised at the same time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, ambush marketing, and particularly around Super Bowl, as you know, we've discussed the cost. It's actually becoming really attractive because you can do it so cleverly and so well through social media and the other cheaper, you know, forums. It's really easy to do, really, really cleverly done. And you could even sort of do some sort of an ambush around your flight center strategy, I would argue. And
I was about to ask, have you done any or experienced any from competitors, Luke?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Can't really talk
please
about a lot of it.
Please outline it piece by piece as we go.
Yeah, but like what you're saying is absolutely, absolutely right. If something happens in the market and it impacts anyone in that industry, whether it's good or bad, we'll see an absolute uptake in consideration or perception in our brand. Same thing will happen to our competitors if something happens in the market. So, yeah, there's competition in our market like any other market.
If you're aware of a particular competitor that's about to come up with their own campaign, do you guys take the brakes off of what you're doing?
No. We run our own race. We don't look at what anyone else is doing. Yeah. We set our plan and we go and do that. We're very strategic. We have our targets. We have our goals, and we set those. We can't really look. We do look outside and see what's happening in our competitors. But you have to run your own race. You have to be strong in what you're going to do. We look at other metrics, so inquiry, TTV, our brand metrics, so awareness, consideration, perception, and content, purchase intent. If those things start dropping, absolutely we'll change tact, but not just because a competitor's in the market doing something different or something the same as us.
Yeah. And in terms of maybe brands that have succeeding in the social space in particular, are there any that you've seen? I think there's a slide that we can put up as well.
This is the one. I saw this one. Did anyone else see this? Three words got that kind of reaction from people. And when you look at the comments, it was like hilarious. People started asking Netflix, hey, why don't you bring back like a prairie on the I don't even know what it's called, some Western TV show, and they're like, absolutely not, you're blocked. And they were just like fully like just going at people. It was so funny. These guys, that's the first time they've done that. But really good on social media is Domino's from an Australian point of view. Their response rate and to talk to customers whether or not they've complained or it's positive really quickly. I think they're probably best in field from an Australian point of view. We're really trying to get up there, but I'd say Domino's are probably leading the charge. Wendy's in America, they're hilarious. So if you follow anyone on Twitter, follow Wendy's. They are just so great. They'll go in and just start hijacking other brands and they'll start talking to them. Yeah. It's great.
I was going to say, there's quite a few BuzzFeed articles about conversations between brands. Yeah.
All the time. I think for me, it's like, how can the brand use social media and just go that little bit left of center? For me, Queensland Police, like every time. Like,
yeah,
it's just something. That's the reaction, right? That's just bizarre.
Head nod
right?
of the night, I think.
A whole room full of people that probably don't give them a great time. Oh, they're brilliant. But it's just a weird. They've just nailed that tone. They're still kind of on track. They do the right thing. They tell you the right stuff.
Well, it's both, though, isn't it? It's informative, right? But then obviously parts of it
Well, I think they realised quite early on, and they're not unless they're here. No, thank God for that one. I think they early on they realise if you want to get cut through, if you actually want that channel to work with you and for you, you can't just be the pourer of bad news. Which clearly, if you think about what their feed is, it's like it's not joyful, right? So they're very early on in the piece, they would have gone, actually, how do we use this channel appropriately and get that kind of reaction for a brand that would never have had that in any.
Is it done internally? Do you know?
I don't know.
Yeah, actually, no. James Client, I think he actually started that whole campaign.
It's amazing.
He won awards and everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Extraordinary. But yeah, he tells that they just did it in house as a, you know, just because they weren't getting, they needed to get a lot of people online in things like, I think it was during the Brisbane floods it all started, where that was the only mechanism they had to communicate to communities.
For government, that's a big move, right? To allow that. I mean, the other one that did it really beautifully during the census was the Australian Bureau of Statistics. Where they literally just worked on every hashtag that was out there. It was during the launch of one of the Harry Potter films, and they started doing statistics about muggles, and they just literally allowed themselves to have a relevant conversation as opposed
taking
to
something that people know you for. Yeah.
And they chased hashtags. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They were literally chasing the hashtags. But I think they got the tone right, and I think that's what really matters.
So from what we've talked about tonight, and maybe from outside experience as well, what are some of the lessons that we can take in how to do these campaigns particularly well? What's the kind of planning that needs to be in place, and then how is it executed? What do you, how agile do you need to be, Luke?
I think you have to be very agile. I think the question was, how do you plan for something, for anything? You need to know, first off, who you're targeting. That's the number one thing. Who's your target market? What are their triggers? What's going to make them want to purchase with you? What's going to make them remember you? And what's going to make them think of you when they're going to purchase? Once you do that, you work out from those things, what are the core things that you want to say? What's the number one thing you want to say to that customer? And then build your campaign around that. And if you don't have that, it will fail. If you have a clear direction, a clear customer in mind with a very strong proposition, then it doesn't matter how much money you have, you will reach your target audience. I think this day and age, we've been talking about it, there's online, there's so many options out there. If you have little budget, you can make things work. You know, you said before, chasing hashtags. I see so many companies just putting all these hashtags on because it's a measurable thing. And I think just do it only if you need it. Don't do it just because everyone else is doing it. You know, do things that are right for your brand, your product, and that's going to be actually triggered to your customer.
So it's not just trying to chase headlines, as probably quite a few brands have been accused of, particularly in the social space.
Well, I think socially, it's easy to have hashtags, likes, comments, shares as your KPIs, or you know your metrics, whether or not it's successful. Sales is the tougher. You know, did it actually result in sales? And I think that's where a good brand will go, yeah, let's look at sales rather than did my hashtag get used 100,000 times. If it doesn't actually turn into an uplift in your sales or inquiry, doesn't matter. A like doesn't mean a purchase.
So this is my other question, actually, that Rob and I have discussed this before, the Oreo campaign that was part of the Super Bowl, I think, 2013 or something. The lights went out at the Superdome in New Orleans, and the Oreo team decided to come up with a graphic saying you can still dunk in the dark. And that was heralded as one of the great campaigns, but the long-term impact of that perhaps hasn't been seen in the way that some other legislation has introduced for them.
I think it's a good exercise of being very careful who you believe the statistics from.
Right.
If we're honest, the campaign of War Tape makes some claim of like $30 million worth of equivalent media impact. And when you actually do the maths on that, it's pretty almost near on impossible to have got to
anywhere
near that number.
That's like six Super Bowl ads
It just didn't. And I think one of the realities for that one is it made no impact on the sales of Oreo or indeed the share price of Oreo on long term. And you know, causation, correlation, do with it as you will. But 6 months later, about 20 states made marijuana legal and their sales rocketed. So not saying that had an effect, but it was a hell of a lot better than the Super Bowl.
There's also another effect. Oreos were accidentally vegan, and they're one of the only cookies you can have as a vegan. So their sales went up because of that as well. And because the vegan diet has increased dramatically, it's one of the growing trends, not only in Australia, but in America. And so that actually increased their sales as well, as marijuana. So, you know, hey.
Both. I'm not saying marijuana increased their sales. Let's be clear. I'm
definitely
saying
there's a
I'm pretty sure I've seen Twitter saying exactly that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a correlation. I'm not saying there's a causation.
But that you going back to what your original question on, you know, what can you do? You know, what's the advice there for people who may not have that budget?
Yeah.
I think the Oreos example is a classic case example on what can be done if you've got agility, you've got your eye on the ball on what is relevant to your target markets, what is news relevant that just then. And people were just so angry when that blackout happened. I think it was at a critical point in the game from memory. I was watching it. And, you know, and to have that come up on their social media was absolute genius. Very, very clever. Very quick thinking. I think it all went through the creatives to approval in 10 minutes.
It was about, about 8 minutes.
From all big agency.
The other thing that's really, 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 really important to remember at the time is the value of a brand as you go into that. There was 22 other brands that also got out messages in about the same time frame, but it's Oreo, and the American public loved Oreo, and the media loved Oreo, so it was the one that was pulled to the front. There was better creative. Nothing wrong with the Oreo one, but there were more elaborate, thought-through ones.
I think they actually planned ahead, though, and had a crack team in the altogether waiting for something to happen.
And that's become a mainstream thing now. I mean, years and years ago, I worked on Gatorade, and Gatorade have teams of people making graphics real-time to put them back to consumers, like live as the sporting events are happening, because they know that brand connection. If you say something and then the brand comes back and say, hey, here's a graphic that we've made just for you on the comment you've made, that connection is worth a lot of money. That's a huge
if you can
connection, right?
Take what someone wants to say and you've got it in visual format, then.
So Gatorade have got a thing called the Mission Room that does exactly that for the entire the conscription and the process of the Super Bowl. So it's like pretty powerful.
Just going back to Super Bowl before we take questions from the crowd as well. The Super Bowl is often used as a platform to launch things. One of the examples that we've got is a particular campaign for Snickers. If we can see that video, this was from 2010.
2010,
yeah. Yeah. Poor quality of video.
Mike, come on!
Mike, what is your deal, man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby.
Whoa.
Eat a Snickers. Better?
Better.
I'm all bent!
That hurt.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
And that's been rolled out, I think, globally for the last 9 years.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, we had the home away guy, right? If you remember, falling off a motorbike. so they literally took that platform and two things that are important. That ad got rolled out in all the versions across the world, but that line has survived. You know, we're now 9 years on, and everything Snickers is still that line. So I think that's one of the things that Super Bowl is so good at. I think we talked about earlier, right? If you crack it and you get something that's so solid. And bear in mind, Snickers has been going for a millennia around the idea of satisfaction in one form or another and the power of peanut. But that little bit, don't joke, that's their main brand attribute, and the power of peanuts. But it for me, that was like a classic example of when Super Bowl really, really works, when you kind of, this is going to be our thing, we back it in, and then we globalize it, as opposed to just going a one-off ad that you could have.
But it speaks to your point, Luke, around if you've got a good idea that speaks to your audience, then it will work. And I think if you'd have maybe taken that out of the Super Bowl context, it still would have probably worked.
It's still a great ad, right? I mean, the new one I find hilarious. I mean, if you've seen the new one with the mobile phone inside the guy who's had an operation.
It's just beautiful,
this idea of a surgeon losing track because he was hungry and he's left the mobile phone. But it's the same ad. It's the same lack of concentration for the need of hunger, and the solution is Snickers. So the ad construct hasn't changed over those years, but the mechanism and the execution has shifted.
You can start to parody yourself almost when people have that level of recognition as well.
And I think the danger of brand managers often, especially new brand managers, it's very easy to come in and go, I'm going to change this. I'm going to put something new in. Yeah, and the chocolate industry, for some reason, are very, very good at. If you think about the 1930 line for Kit Kat, you know, have a break, have a Kit Kat. No one's ever shifted that. Mars, work, rest, and play. You know,
Cadbury's.
So there's just, for some reason, the chocolate industry are better at it than most of actually being heavily consistent. But I think that's where brands have played really well in Super Bowl. They kind of go, the ones that work are the ones that go, and actually, we're going to use this platform for what it is, but we're not just going to immediately abandon our brand to get cheap bucks, like you could argue that Olay did.
Yep. Question time is coming up very shortly, but just before then, perhaps we can finish off with all-time favorite Super Bowl ads and a quick summary about why this campaign worked for you. In fact, Sarah and Rob, I think you both have the same ad.
We did, awkwardly picked the same one, right?
I feel so, really vindicated. You know, head of Clemenger picked it as well. It's a cracker.
Perhaps we can roll that one. Thank you.
Hi, listener. At this point in the conversation, a video was referred to which we don't have permission to reproduce here. You can find a link to it in the show notes. For now, let's get back to it.
So that was Volkswagen with an inspired ad.
I'll talk about this one, shall I? Yeah, the one thing, what I love about this ad is that you can just see the brief would have come in, right? You can start the car remotely, do an ad. Right, it's a product feature ad, like it's of the most basic form, but just the fact that someone went there with it, I just in envy of that creative mind that just went, right, it'll be the last 2 seconds of the ad. We're not going to show any benefit of why it starts, or you know, there would have been a list, right? Like, you can cold start it and all this kind of stuff. It's a German brand, so you know, frozen engines, all that kind of stuff. No, none of that. Let's have none of that. We're just going to have Darth Vader and. And how the hell do
and
you
music
get,
as well. That's
the,
it.
Well,
that right?
would have cost some money, right? There's licensing in there, so no doubt about it would have cost some money. And the second part of that is how the hell do you get that much acting out of a kid with a helmet on? Like, you all laugh in the right places, emotionally take the right things out. He's chasing the dog. It's exquisitely acted, and you never see anything other than his hands. I just think it's inspired.
Anything to add to that?
Oh, I totally agree. I love it every time I see it. And it's been years now, hasn't it? But I love the way it successfully, I guess, like any good narrative resolves a problem. So the problem gets resolved in the end. The magic works because of that feature. But also they draw on nostalgia. They draw on universal popularity in Star Wars. They draw on humor.
Inclusivity, father, I suppose, with the whole of the family context.
Yeah, the emotional appeal as well. Everything that advertising does so well all in one ad, I think it's fantastic. I did read about the making of that ad, which you would probably, I think it was Deutsch Agency.
Yeah.
So I remember hearing the story. The creatives actually had an idea around Darth Vader. They just thought it's, you know, the black box. We're going to, there's something in that. And he was above the photocopier in there for months. And then they had it, and it was done in a day or something, the concept. It was quite, it's an interesting story.
I also like the fact that dad's not the butt of the joke, but it is a dad joke. No, there's a dad joke, right? But advertising had a nasty trend around it, and still does to a certain extent, where mum makes the statement, dad's the butt of the joke. And I like the fact that there's that moment at the sink where he kind of looks at mum and goes, and it's a definite dorky dad moment, but he still comes out as an okay dad, you know? So I think actually does a nice job of framing up the family.
And all
they
that
even
in 30
seconds.
For well.
Christ's sake. I mean, it's all there. So.
And then perhaps we can show Luke's one as well. This is for Dollar Shave Club.
Hi, I'm Mike, founder of DollarShaveClub.com. What is DollarShaveClub.com? Well, for a dollar a month, we send high-quality razors right to your door. Yeah, a dollar. Are the blades any good? No. Our blades are f***ing great. Each razor has stainless steel blades, an aloe vera lubricating strip, and a pivot head. It's so gentle a toddler could use it. And do you like spending $20 a month on brand name razors? 19 go to Roger Federer. I'm good at tennis.
And do you think your razor needs a vibrating handle, a flashlight, a back scratcher, and 10 blades? Your handsome ass grandfather had one blade and polio. Looking good, pop up! Stop paying for shave tech you don't need. And stop forgetting to buy your blades every month. Alejandro and I are going to ship them right to you. We're not just selling razors. We're also making new jobs. Alejandro, what were you doing last month?
Not working.
What are you doing now?
Working.
I'm no Vanderbilt, but this train makes hay. So stop forgetting to buy your blades every month and start deciding where you're going to stack all those dollar bills I'm saving you. We are DollarShaveClub.com, and the party is on.
What more do you need to say?
Yeah. amazing script, fantastic talent, fantastic. That's kind of the opposite of the other ad. You know, the other ad's so well produced, great talent, you know, a really well known soundtrack, all this money thrown at it. But this ad costs, well, what do you say, the guy said was $15,000. Probably not in real life, like in real terms, but, you know, they probably threw $25,000-$30,000 at that ad, and it got so much traction. People love it. People laugh at it. It's got engagement. People still watch it on YouTube. I use it all the time as part of our briefs. I always go, I want this ad. I want an ad like this. And because it does what it needs to do, it tells a really simple message. At the end of the day, he's selling $1 razors, and it's hilarious, and it makes you go, yeah, I should get a $1 razor. That's Why am I spending all this money on Gillette? And then there you go.
I suppose it's pointing out all the features as you go along, and you ended up nodding, yes, yes, yes. By the end of it, you're just like, yeah, take my money. My $1.
$1. What are you doing?
Well, look, I've run out of questions, but it's over to you guys now. So if you've got any questions for our panel, please raise your hand. We've got one in the back and then one at the front here.
Hello. Hi. My name's Sarah. I'm from Orange Digital, a digital marketing agency in the Valley. I have a question on, I wouldn't necessarily call it a Super Bowl ad or even an ad, really. It's the Skittles Broadway musical. Did you guys all catch that one? I just wanted to
It's unfortunate that we didn't have time to show it this evening because it was genius.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of hear your guys' thoughts on that and how you thought it was successful or unsuccessful. I think it was successful. But.
So for anyone that hasn't seen it, this is it Michael C. Hall? Yeah. So he is, through a number of different sketches, putting together a Broadway musical, and there's some swearing in it about how advertising is not great. And I think he actually put this musical on whilst the Super Bowl was happening.
It was in a break time. Yes, yeah. And apparently it almost sold out and you got Skittles on the way in. So
there you go.
Sounded pretty good.
Good old Skittles.
Guys, thoughts?
No, I think it's very Skittles. I mean, if you follow the history of Skittles, if you get a chance after this, go and get the download the brand identity book for Skittles. It's the funniest read you'll ever have in your life. It has nothing about brand identity in it, but Skittles. This is Skittles, right? This is what Skittles do. They're anti-establishment. They are. I mean, they're made by the establishment, for God's sake. They're still just sugary pills, but they've done a really, really good job of kind of going, we're going to be anti to what everybody else does. I mean, right the way down to the pox. You know, the way he pulls the pox off it. I mean, it's sweet, for God's sake. They pull it off people's faces. It's revolting. But I think it made a lot of sense. Now, whether I believe that advertising doesn't work is another story for another day. But I think what they did was try to get maximum cut through off of what is a reasonably simple premise, but by poking the fun at advertising. I think what happens with the Super Bowl, and we see it here at Christmas as well, is that there aren't many times in a year when people stop to really take in what advertising is. Like it's part of our life. It blends over. So I think what they did was tapped into that fact that at this one moment in time, you can have a commentary around advertising and people care. So I think they did it was incredible production, right? It was outlandish, but I think they did a good job of hijacking and kind of going, well, we're going to talk about the thing everybody's talking about, but we're not going to be part of it.
Anyone with anything else to add?
I was so on it, to be honest with you. Like, I thought it was too long. I thought, I don't know. I haven't seen the sales results of Skittles, so I don't know what the brand lift or if their sales went up or anything like that. But I watched it and I was bored. Like, I got to the point, I was like, oh, this is funny. This is good. Then I'm like, there's nothing else to it. And I was like, I'm done. So I shut it down. But that's just my personal opinion. I have seen some amazing Skittles ads and I don't think it was one of them. But again, my opinion.
There was one a couple of years ago, I think it was an online one, where there was a picture of a Skittle in the middle of the screen and then it asked you to put your finger on the Skittle. And then slowly but surely you're in the kitchen and there's a guy dressed as a cat who comes up and starts licking your finger. It's bizarre. Really, really, really bizarre.
Sounds about right.
Anything else to add, Sarah?
Oh, no, these guys cat are licking the creators. Fingers, how can I add to that? I guess, it's always after that. Yeah, the anti-establishment resonating once again with the millennials and the Gen Z, I would say, coming through, that they love all of that. It resonates and they'll share it. That's the other thing. It's that cut through. It's so important for that, the buzz, the viral buzz.
Yeah. We had a question towards the front here.
Hi, yeah, thanks. Kurt from the content division. Sarah, I've sort of got two questions that relate to everything. Sarah, you were talking about purpose and in particular market segments, Gen Z, millennial. As an academic, what have you come across that's really supported that idea of purpose in brand? To me, it's kind of like overdone. a lot, but you know, the right mix is obviously, you know, the thing that cuts through. So what's the data or the research that's backed that up?
Yeah, look, I'm seeing at the moment in, you know, some of the really the top peer-reviewed marketing, advertising, even behavioral economics journals, they're now developing scales that are increasingly validated around brand authenticity. And on the flip side, the newest one, just the last sort of year or so, seeing reliable measures of fakeness of brands. So I think now it's going to become a pretty big metric, I would say, in terms of brand equity measurement. And then tied to that, I suppose, is the trend that we're talking about where, you know, political platforms are used, newsjacking, also, I guess, social causes and cause-related marketing as well, social platforms. So I think that might be built into these sorts of metrics as well. So I think it's a new metric in brand equity that we're certainly seeing in the journals that will come into practice for sure. Certainly in America it's starting, I know that.
Sure, sure. And Rob, just sort of thinking, you know, probably a lot of people in this room are digital marketers, you know, younger. We all live online and we do all these things. And I know that we live in digital world and websites and EDMs and all these things. I can't see anything beating the Super Bowl as the pinnacle of advertising, even though it's got all this stuff around it. Is that a fair comment, or do you think it's sort of, you know, destined to sort of die off compared with other things?
Oh, look, I think, well, there's still big brands with big budgets. It'll stay a thing. It's like the Christmas ad for John Lewis, right? It's become a thing. It'll stay there. I think what's interesting when you look at the digital space, attribution to this is not good. Like, it's very hard to prove direct attribution anyway. We've seen like stock market shifts, but that's probably partly relevant to the fact the stock market watched the same Super Bowl you and I do and they get excited by it. So I think, and we talk often about the tactification of marketing and how it spreads into those back channels because they're attributable. Is this doing this? I don't know. I think when we start talking about metrics and soft metrics, valuing a brand is an extremely complex thing. There's a wonderful video by Mark Ritson who rips apart the three major brand pricing companies. And it works, I think it was Coca-Cola, I may get this wrong, but Coca-Cola went from anything from 6 billion to 160-something billion. And it's just like, that can't be right. You can't have that kind of variant in the number. And I think that's part of the problem. These guys are going to do this because they know it lifts their brand. Do they know by how much? Hand on heart, probably not. But in the grand scheme of investment, 5 million sounds a lot to us. To the likes of Pepsi, it's another drop in the ocean. So I think they will continue to do this. I think this is probably not the pinnacle of any of their marketing in real terms. They're doing other things in the background. They're always on products and all that kind of stuff. And you look at the Coca-Cola expenditure, that's... Yeah, it's nothing to them. It's a huge amount to us, and especially in this corner of the world, right? It's a huge amount of numbers. But to them, they're just going to go, we know it gets lift. How much? Don't know. But if it's 0.5%, 0.25%, it's well worth the money.
I think, though, if sales start decreasing, budgets will decrease, and they'll be one of the first ones to go. Like, they, you know, if you've got $5 million out of a $100 million marketing budget, and I'm like, I got one ad on one thing, and it's $5 million or $3 million, as a marketer, I'll be like, oh, I don't know. There's no metric there that it's going to work. So is there, with the audiences decreasing in Super Bowl, will they start pulling out? And the first one who goes, a Pepsi, who goes, you know what, this year we're not doing Super Bowl. We're going to put that $5 million into the rainforest. We're going to put $5 million into helping starving children in Georgia or something. Something different and making a stance, will that make a bigger impact on the brand?
I think it would as a statement. I don't think the money matters in that instance.
True. I'm just saying.
Making the big statement? Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was a few brands missing this year, which kind of like, you know, there's a lot of red into the brands that didn't turn up. But I don't know they're actually making. So Ford was a classic, right, which is like traditionally been this huge kind of there, and it was discreet to the extreme, you know. So I think that those moments in time are like...
And they advertise a lot for regular NFL. If you watch the NFL, there is a Ford ad every other ad.
Yeah, and I think for them to... And I don't know if they... I'm not going to go as far to say they didn't appear because I'm not... Who's watched all the ads? But they certainly didn't rate in any of the things I was reading. So that's an interesting one itself.
Anything else to add?
I was just going to mention it was also a really pretty boring game. And I think that affects ratings. There's no doubt about it. The playoffs were much more exciting, so I imagine the placement there was a better payoff.
Yeah, and there's talk in America about how people have the advertising parties, right? They turn up and they talk during the game and they, you know, stop for the advert. So, well, that's happening. There's going to be enough marketers go, this is worth a bang for a buck. I think one of the other things that comes out of that attribution model quite commonly is the fact that, that the value of the brand impact gets lost. A lot of tactified marketers will go, where's my ROI? Where, my immediate ROI on sales? Some of these guys have got, the budget's not coming out of that sales ROI pot, it's coming out of the brand ROI pot. Because they're all, you know, virtually all of these are, you know, listed businesses, right? They're not, they're trying to get a share price as well as a retail price.
So just to close, guys, thank you very much all for coming this evening. Perhaps we can finish with maybe your top tips for people to take away with them, a summary of what we've learned here this evening. Rob, do you want to kick us off?
You just need 5 million. It's easy. No. Look, I think no matter what the budget, no matter what you do, be authentic to the brand. I think the misses we saw this year are ones that just went, you know, go for glory, forget the brand, abandon it, go and do something else. I think, you know, at the end of the day, have your purpose, have your brand, know who you are and stick to that gun, no matter what channel you're in.
And Luke?
I totally agree. That's exactly that. Budget, placement, all those things do not matter. It's about being true to your brand and being authentic and making sure that you're speaking to your customer and always thinking about your customer and also your potential customers.
Do you have any tips for people on how they would go about getting that insight for their customer and what's important to them?
There's lots and lots of ways of doing that. There's lots of research companies. There's free surveys you can do online. There's, you know, you can do your own research. You can go and talk to people in your own brand. Go stand if you are a retailer, stand in front of your store and talk to people who are purchasing. There is so many ways that you can learn about your brand and how people interact with your brand. You don't have to go and pay for a massive research company to do that for you. You absolutely can. But there's so many alternatives out there these days that very cost-effective ways to learn about your customer. If you're an online business, you know, you can ask questions on social, ask people, ask your customers, what do they want? You know, what do they think? What I love about digital is that it's a two-way conversation. It's not a one-way conversation. Your job as a marketer is to hear from your customer and listen and react to what they want. You know, it was a lot easier as a marketer in the 80s, I'm sure. You put your ad on TV and it's done. It's, you don't, who cares? Just put it on there. You know you're going to reach them and they'll come and buy it because they don't really have a choice. Now everyone has a choice and so you should listen to them.
Good advice.
I think my only addition to that would be talk to your frontline staff. Like call centers, like we spend time with call centers. If anybody knows how your customers are feeling about anything, anyone time.
If anyone's heard any anecdotes,
yeah, it's definitely the poor guys in the call center, right? Especially if it's an inbound and outbound, like they know it all. But they get ignored quite a lot.
We've actually just moved our call center guys into my team. So they're part of the brand marketing team now. So we can actually be part of the conversation to the customers. It's only new early days. We've just did it 2 weeks ago. So it is something that we need to know what whether they're negative or positive comments. We need to know why people are unhappy and why they are happy. And so now that they're part of the marketing team, we can get absolute correlation to what's going on and know what's going on. And we can change our brand really quickly.
Yeah, fantastic. Anything to wrap up from you, sir?
Oh, no, probably just I agree. I don't think Super Bowl is irrelevant at all and nor are these big mega events. I think there's a lot of prestige for launching or repositioning around those events. So for the right brands with the big budgets especially, or even the Bumbles that have a lot of, I know they've got a lot of accelerator funding, venture capital funding in, it probably is money well spent in that respect. But on the other hand, I think as well that agility I mentioned earlier and definitely leveraging that technology, particularly AI technology, you can now in real time detect and engage with your target audiences in a very deep and meaningful way and get the evaluation of how that went. So you can experiment a lot. You can take risks because they don't cost that much and you can evaluate how those experiments went in the online world really quickly. So I think that's a tremendous opportunity for really creative advertisers as well. So an easy way to do it cost effectively.
Get content into the market and then learn, iterate and go from there.
And using that AI and the patterns of engagement between your customers and brands, because you can get such a sophisticated profile now, and understanding in, you know, through a large AI reach what the long-term trends are going to be. I think that's really interesting and a huge asset for advertisers.
Technology that could require its own panel as well, I'm sure. Well, look, thank you very much for coming here this evening, guys. If you could join me in giving our panelists a round of applause.
We hope you enjoyed this episode's content. Thanks for listening. It would be great if you could give us an iTunes review so others could find us. Check out the show notes for more information about this episode and a link to an upcoming Networks Brisbane event. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Tune in next time for a different topic and a panel of speakers.